I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison. 2 hours a day, 9 to 11 o'clock. Next hour, it's Tuesday. I've got some tech headlines to do in our Tech Tuesday segment. For those of you worried about personal freedom, resist the call for a cashless society with every breath in your body. There's a story making the rounds of some corporate decisions around cashless transactions that should concern us all. This is one of those red line issues, so we'll talk a little bit about that. They are, I mean, I've kind of got it. It'd be a good building show today. Markets are not looking good. This financial system it's rattling. It's in the death rattle. If you've ever been on a skateboard, going down a big hill, sailing along, everything seems great, the wind in your hair, and then you start to get that little wobble on your skateboard. We're wobbling. That's what we're going to talk about, the markets and why they're in some turmoil today. I'm going to show you what the big banks are doing to us. It's so in your face. I wish I could show you a flyer from Chase Bank, but I'll have to narrate it for you. Anyway, a lot to get to today. I can be charged with being a doom and gloomer, having a depressing show. Sometimes it's so intense, you know, I take these accusations. I try to be positive, but sometimes things are just so horrific, I cannot not cover them. And I'm going to lead off with one story like that. Has anybody out there seen the movie Moonfall? This is a Halle Berry movie. I can't remember what streaming service I just saw this thing on. I think it was HBO Max. Could be wrong. Maybe this was a Prime. I don't know. I've gotten duped into too many streaming services. It's really very ridiculous that I even carry these things. But I'm a sci-fi. I love a good disaster movie. I've told you many times I'm attracted to chaos, love tornadoes and hurricanes and fascinated by earthquakes and all these kinds of things. It makes me weird. Something wrong with me there. I don't know what it is, but I saw this movie. It looked like a sci-fi disaster movie. There's some aliens involved, so I'm all in if I hear a movie's got some aliens involved. So I tuned into this Moonfall thing. Oh, my God. This is possibly the worst movie I've ever seen. And I watched the entire thing. I couldn't take my eyes off of it. It's directed by Roland Emmerich. I think he's a pretty big-time. I get lost in some of these names. I think he's one of these big-time, you know, special effect, big-budget movie directors. The acting in this thing, I mean, it's a disaster movie. And by that, I mean not just the subject matter of it. The entire movie is an absolute disaster. It's an incredibly bad movie. The acting is terrible. Halle Berry. I haven't seen her in anything. I don't consume a whole lot of it. It's rare that I go to the movies, and I don't get a whole lot of entertainment. I haven't seen Halle Berry doing anything, so I'm sure she wanted a paycheck. Halle Berry is so good looking. She should be able to just get paid for sitting around being pretty. She really is just an absolutely gorgeous woman. But holy cow, the cheesy acting. I hate to bring this to you, but maybe I've saved you some time. This is not like Sharknado bad. Does anybody remember Sharknado? This movie was so bad that it was funny. I'm not ever sure if it was designed to be as campy and bad as it was, or if they were trying to make a good movie. This is a David Hasselhoff production, as I recall. But this is not even Sharknado bad. This is just one of the worst movies I have ever seen. So spare yourself a couple of hours, or watch it like you would slow down on the interstate for a train wreck. It's amazing. They got so many big name actors to put together such a bad, just absolutely horrific movie. So anyway, quotes of the day today. I wanted to do a little segment. What's the Libertarian Party saying these days? I've been talking about the change at the Libertarian Party, so occasionally I'll take a break, read out some of the tweets, some of the things coming out of the LP, which is short for the Libertarian Party. So a couple of tweets from them, and then I'm gonna get to a Ben Shapiro, a long Ben Shapiro quote that was quite interesting. Libertarian Party tweeted out this: the U.S. government is the biggest global terrorist organization. There's just a period after that, no explanation. It's just dead on right and succinct. The U.S. government is the biggest global terrorist organization. For some people, that may be too harsh. This is a show about real freedom, real constitutionally constrained government. So, sorry about that. Reed Cooley, he's the comms director for the Libertarian Party. He tweeted this out. He said, no government agency in Washington, D.C. has to exist in order to have a free and functioning society. Not one. The great hoax of the 20th century was that of normalizing the welfare state to the extent that people can no longer imagine life without it. Now, here's one. I know a lot of conservatives, a lot of the freedom fighters out there, the Madison moms that are taking on the school boards and things like that. Tell me what, if you've got any problems with this. A tweet from the Libertarian Party. This is the Libertarian Party tweeting this out. Quote, diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, is a racist, Marxist scheme made to divide people along imaginary lines of, quote, privilege, unquote. It's Marx's class consciousness applied to the modern workplace, and you shouldn't have to deal with it to provide for yourself or your family. So if you're looking for a partner in the culture war as well, you know, the Libertarian Party is also joined in the fight. Now, this was interesting to me. I'm going to play this as kind of a long-form quote of the day. Now, this is Ben Shapiro, incredibly smart guy. Many things that I disagree with Ben Shapiro on. He's a bit of a militarist. He's an Orthodox Jewish guy, very Israel-first guy. I would debate with him this idea that we need to send off billions of dollars and fight wars for any other country. I don't care if it's Germany, Portugal, or Israel. I might disagree with him on some of those things, and he's probably got some other positions. But I enjoyed Ben Shapiro, incredibly smart guy and a fast talker. Boy, this guy's fast. But he enunciates well, so it's not a problem at all. He gets out a lot of information in a short period of time. This was Ben Shapiro on the Joe Rogan Show. And as like I say, I'm a lonely guy here, as the lone libertarian probably in the state of Mississippi with a radio show. And a lot of people say, well, I lean libertarian, which that's just really code word for most conservatives going, I'm really scared of real freedom like the founding fathers. We need cops to enforce a lot of stuff here or it's just going to be bedlam. This show's about real freedom. And I love it when kind of a mainstream conservative figure discovers those kinds of things.
Have conservative values moved in one way or another? Have they,
I mean,
they shifted,
I would say,
at all?
My personal values probably haven't shifted very much, but my political values have shifted libertarian.
Mm.
Ah. I mean, so I used to be a proponent of criminalization of marijuana. I'm no longer. I've been in favor of
what
decriminalization.
What changed that for you?
A couple of things. One was just a general sense the government sucks at everything.
Amen.
And the more I see the government try to crack down on things, the more prevalent it becomes. I mean, people were dealing pot on my 6th grade, 7th grade playground in public school. So obviously, like,
that was in LA.
Yeah, exactly. and then
that's terrible.
Just a general perception, not only that the government sucks at everything, but that you got to own your own actions, and also examining more of the evidence about the impact of pot on people's lives. And you know, again, there's you ruining your own life through use of drugs, and then there's drugs that legitimately ruin other people's lives, right? There are mm-hmm. drugs that remove your ability to even reason or think. I think there are only two reasons to criminalize drugs in any fashion. One is if there are drugs like, for example, PCP that legitimately make you violent, and then you are going out and committing acts of violence against people, then there's a case. Or if you're talking about a drug where it legitimately robs you of your capacity to reason. If it were heroin, if you were able to actually crack down on it successfully, but even there, I'm not sure that the proper government solution is criminalization, because we've criminalized it and it's still incredibly prevalent. So
yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you on that. And I agree with you in terms of drugs being extremely detrimental. And the other part is that there's comparable drugs that are legal. And comparable drugs meaning not even really comparable, drugs that are far more devastating, like alcohol. Like you could just go to any grocery store and buy a jug of whiskey and kill yourself with it.
Yep.
It's not difficult. We have laws on the books already
that prevent externalities. Yeah. If you drive high, it's the same as driving drunk.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that you need additional laws to do that. And also, you know, I'm not opposed to zoning laws. Like, I don't think a pot shop should open up right next to my house, right? They're residential zoning. That's fine.
Same with liquor stores, though.
Right. I don't want a liquor store right next to my house. This is correct.
Yeah.
Right. So I've become libertarian in some ways on that sort of stuff. The same thing is true, by the way, when it comes to the issue.
Okay. There we go. Ben Shapiro, if that gives anybody any cover to join me in fighting against the ridiculous failed drug war there, you got a little bit of cover. Ben Shapiro has become more libertarian around these things. I love it. He talks about even heroin. So it can rob you of your ability to even think. Obviously, heroin can be an incredibly destructive drug. But maybe the best way to tackle the problem here is not to use the government that has done nothing but increase heroin use over the past 50 years in the war on drugs. I like a realist. Anybody who will actually think through something rather than knee-jerk emotionality to an issue. So there you go. Ben Shapiro joining me in fighting against the ridiculous failed drug war. I'll be right back. Radio is the sound of salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. They say you better listen to the right side of reason. But they don't give you any choice because they think that it's treason. The stock market is not happy today. Right now, the Dow is down about 2%, around 700 points on the Dow. The NASDAQ, with the higher valuations of stocks, the more expensive, the more overvalued, the more bubblicious exchange, is down right now about 3.25%. And the reason for that is the inflation rate came in. It's according to Market Watch here. Dow drops more than 600 points as U.S. stocks open sharply lower after CPI data reflect persistence of inflation. The inflation figure came out. It has actually risen from last month, 0.1% up to 8.3% from 8.2%. We know these are underreported numbers if we calculate them the way they were back in the 1980s when we had our last bout of noticeable inflation. Severe inflation. We've always got inflation. They try to hide it from us, but we know we pay for things. We know. So anyway, the market's unhappy about this inflation at 8.2%. I think I've got a new jingle that I can start playing on the show. Remember that these numbers, as they're reporting inflation now, are now compounding. And I did a little bit of math here because, you know, now it says, we're at 8.3% inflation right now. We've been as high as, I think, what did we, 9.1 was the highest print that we got from them. Again, an understatement of what it was, but that's what they gave us, a 9.1. We're at 8.3. This does not mean that prices are 8.3% higher than they were 5 years ago or even 3 years ago. No, this is from last year, and we actually, headline CPI came hotter than expected, rising 0.1% month over month versus expectations of dropping 0.1% month over month. That's the 27th straight month of rising inflation. It was odd. I looked at that and I said, wait, what? 27 months? Putin's only been in Ukraine for 6 months. How is this possible? And Biden has only been in office for 19 months. Don't bust my bubble and tell me that prices were already starting to increase during Trump's term, because we were led to believe that if Trump was in office, we wouldn't have this inflation, even though he and Joe Biden both hand in hand increased our money supply by about 40% in 2 years. So this is what's happening. But these numbers are compounding now. So I looked at last year's inflation rate for August of 2021. It was at 5.39%. And again, these are all underestimates, of course. So if something cost $100 in 2020, in 2021 it cost $105.35. It went up by 5.35%. Well, now it's another year later. You take the 8% inflation, this 8.3%, not of the $100 that something cost 2 years ago, but you got to compound that from the increase between 2020 to 2021. Now with 2021, now that $100 thing in 2020 now cost $114.09. These numbers are compounding, and as Bachman-Turner Overdrive just told you, you ain't seen nothing yet. The markets are upset because they believe that this higher inflation figure than they thought would come out is going to make the Fed raise rates more, which is going to take the monetary heroin away from Wall Street, all the free money, all the zero interest money. And so they're extremely worried that this is going to hamper the game they've been running on all of us for well over a decade now. This is... to add insult to injury. Holy cow. The whole premise of my show, again, is we're all getting screwed by the same people. This was interesting. There was a story about the fact that credit card rates, U.S. credit card rates, just hit their highest on record. This is obvious. Credit card rates will go up in a rising interest rate environment, but they now, the average credit card rate is now 18.03%. Let's see, the previous record was 17.87% set in April of 2019. Huh, that wasn't during Biden's term. That's weird. Anyway, credit card rates now have hit their highest levels ever as far as average interest. But here's the interesting thing. In this rising interest rate environment, what's supposed to happen, if there's anybody out there that's more than 25 years old, you probably remember a time when you used to put money into a savings account and get something called interest on that money. Does anybody remember that? I know the senior citizens out there remember. Back in 1980, when they were fighting inflation back then, you could go out and get a CD, a certificate of deposit, like a five-year CD. It might pay you 18, 19% a year because they were raising interest rates to fight inflation. So home mortgage rates were certainly high. Mortgages were going to be 22, 23, 24%. But the offset to that was that you could also, if you parked your money, if you saved money, then the banks were going to pay you high interest on it. Not in the new world. So we've got the highest credit card interest rates on average that we've ever seen. And here is the consumer deposit rates from Chase Bank, what I believe is the largest bank institution in the world. This is as of last Friday, September 9th. This is almost funny because they use standard rates and relationship rates. So I guess this is kind of, you know, hey, if you're one of us, if you're part of the Chase, the J.P. Morgan Chase family, we're going to really hook you up. Here, let's listen to some of the Chase Premier Savings, their relationship rate. If you have a balance of between $0 and $9,999, if you have the relationship rate, you know, the inside deal with Chase, they're going to pay on that savings 0.02%. Not 2%, 0.02%. Now, this is one of these institutions charging the highest credit card rates we've ever had on average. But if you park money with them, if you save money with them, under $10,000, you're going to get 0.02%. Here's where it gets fun. This is where you can tell they really love the savers out there. But if you've got $10,000 to $25,000, or actually $24,999, if you park that in one of their, air quotes here in the studio, relationship accounts, they're also going to pay you 0.02%. Now, if you're a diligent saver and you've racked up a little cash and you got to find a place to put it, and you've got somewhere between $25,000 and $49,999, and you get the relationship rate from Chase Bank, they're going to pay you, again, 0.02%. 0.02% is what they're paying for their savings accounts. And on this entire sheet, it's got their private client checking. If you need something liquid on their private client checking, you can get 0.01% interest on that. They're going to pay you a little something. And by little, that's the focus word there. So while credit card rates are at their highest in history on average, savings rates, what the banks are paying people on their savings, is not budging, at least not here at Chase Bank. And I would imagine across the banking spectrum, if Chase feels that they can still attract savings to their bank, and they like to have customer deposits, it allows them the ability to loan more money. I would imagine other banks are following suit, but 0.02% on your savings. I got to say, they're really rewarding the savers out there in this country, aren't they? I'm going to put a call out to people. I was looking at the Madison County Journal, Herald, I can't remember what it is, the Madison County paper last week. There was an insert in there about Madison County tax sales, and it seemed surprising to me. But I don't have any historical context. I don't really know what I'm talking about, so maybe this was completely normal. If you understand what tax sales are on property, it's people who fall behind on their taxes. I believe you get about 2 years to catch up these taxes, and then they send you notices, and if you haven't paid the taxes then, it goes up for tax sale. And my understanding is I believe you can lose a property over a few thousand dollars, possibly even a few hundred dollars, possibly a few dozen dollars, if you do not give up to Caesar what is Caesar's in these local communities. This is why you can never truly own a home, as long as we have these confiscatory taxing authorities above us all. Oh, you can go pay cash for a house. You can go buy your land. You can do whatever you want to. But if you don't give up your VIG to your local government, they make him take that spot from you. You never truly own it here in the land of the free. And so with these tax sale things, you can lose properties over tax sales, my understanding is. The tax sale portion of the Madison County paper was, I believe, 17 pages long. I think that's correct. And if you understand, so it's a good full-size paper, maybe not as big as a 1980s paper, but it's full fold-out, you know, you fold it in half, you unfold it, you put it out on the kitchen table, and you pull it. You know, it's a good-sized newspaper, and every listing for a tax sale is about an inch and a half big. And there's about four or five columns across each page. 17 pages of entries of tax sales in Madison County, one of the most affluent counties, certainly in the state of Mississippi, and I believe by some of the zip codes in Madison, one of the most affluent areas on planet Earth, really. Madison County is a really great place to raise kids. Now, as I say, this seemed weird to me. It seemed like a lot of people behind on taxes. But I didn't look at it back in 2021, 2020, 2019. I'm not a tax sale guy. Maybe this is completely normal. People who had these tax sales things, they can stroke a check to the local mafia and get their property back. It's not a big problem. You know, you pay a little bit of a fine. If you owe $989, you might have, you know, $112 in interest and penalties and stuff for not paying your taxes. You can get this back. You can say these are not all properties about to change hands. And so maybe this is normal. People just forget to pay their taxes. They wait till it gets to be kind of serious. Then they stroke the check and they keep their property. And this happens year after year after year. I was just surprised. So if anybody does tax sale stuff, if you understand tax sales, I would like to know if that was odd, because it struck me as concerning that there were 17 pages with four or five columns per page of listings that are about 2 inches deep, meaning that there were probably well over 100 parcels of property on every single page. I actually think it was probably higher than that. It seemed like a lot. I'll just put it there. And if an affluent community like Madison County is having this many people that are not able to pay the taxes on their property, seems like maybe we got a problem. I'm just saying. If you know anything about tax sales, feel free to call me on a break. I'm going to move on to something else in just a second. Or if you want to email me, MikeMadison@WYEB.com. Very curious to know if this is odd or if this is just very normal and it's not any big deal. Nothing's really changed. I'd appreciate the input. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I have compared the grand experiment on humanity through these shots to be similar to a sniper along I-55. You know, not everybody that drives down I-55 is going to be shot and killed, but if somebody is still occasionally picking somebody off, it seems like a news story that should continue to be covered until the sniper is apprehended and the danger is past. The sniper is still on I-55, as far as I'm concerned, in my comparison to this shot. People are still being hurt by these things. And so when I come across a couple of stories to fill up a segment or two about what's going on, I want to make sure that I mention it. This is not over by a long shot. I spoke to a doctor yesterday with a major medical group here in Mississippi. I won't talk about who he is or who his group is. I would imagine this is very similar to every single medical group, but they're forcing him to resubmit his exemption to this experimental gene therapy. He got an exemption to it a year ago. The year is up. Now it's basically still mandated to take this shot with everything that we know, right? We know that it doesn't stop you from catching COVID. We know that it doesn't stop you from transmitting COVID. Can you tell me why a medical professional who can still go into a medical setting and spread a disease should be required to take a shot that doesn't affect that spread? But they're sticking to it. And this is what I said to him. I said, "How is?" And he said it to me. He said, "Isn't that amazing? With everything that we know about this shot now, it doesn't work. It doesn't stop you from getting it. Doesn't stop you from spreading it. Doesn't stop you from going to the hospital and doesn't stop you from dying." But they are still forcing their doctors and their medical staff to take this thing or prove their exemption every year. So get this. This is why they're doing it. His belief was they're doing it to cover their asses legally. Because if they drop the mandate, then the people forced to get it before who didn't want it, but at threat of losing their job, they went and got it, they might sue. So they are going to continue to force more people to get more shots, more experimental gene therapies, so that they don't have to admit the mistake that they made a year ago. This is your medical system. And this is across the board. This is not just this guy's medical group. This is all of them. Where are the great American attorneys? You know, the biggest payday in the history of mankind awaits some enterprising trial attorney out there. And I've talked about this many times. I was hoodwinked, largely by Republicans, into thinking that all trial attorneys were just greedy pieces of human refuse. And then I started waking up to the abuses of the biggest corporations against the people. And there is no abuse bigger than what Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, all of them involved in this experiment on mankind. There's no bigger abuse than what has taken place with this inoculation program. The largest class action lawsuit in the history of the world is primed and ready to go. You're talking about being able to take in hundreds of millions of people into a class action lawsuit. Now, the sad thing is, Pfizer's not made enough money in the past 50 years to pay what would be justified to everybody that they tricked into taking this thing. But I think, hopefully, as they discover the fraud in the testing, which is quite obvious, that they can somehow pierce this legal liability shield that our government, including Donald Trump and Joe Biden, gave. I believe it was Donald Trump that signed the PREP Act and gave these manufacturers complete liability protection. When we find out there was fraud in the testing, maybe that protection can be pierced. But there is some group of attorneys out there that deserve to be the richest people in the world by taking down this Hitlerian experiment. And then once they sue them into oblivion, they should be held in Nuremberg-style trial. But isn't it amazing that a medical group that supposedly understands medicine and health and all these kinds of things, in order to cover their butts legally, they're just going to continue to force people to take something that doesn't work and has proven to be dangerous. You don't think that's the case? Here we go. A new study published in the New England Journal of Medicine. A new study published in the New England Journal of Medicine shows not only that the effectiveness of the Pfizer COVID vaccine becomes negative, meaning the vaccinated are more likely to be infected than the unvaccinated, within 5 months, but that the vaccine destroys any protection a person has from natural immunity. The study is a large observational study that looked at 887,193 children aged 5 to 11 years in North Carolina, of whom 30% received at least one dose of Pfizer between November 1st, 2021 and June 3rd of 2022. Study includes 193,346 SARS-CoV-2 infections reported between March 11th of 2020 and June 3rd of 2022. The researchers used a form of statistical modeling with adjustments for confounding factors such as underlying health conditions to calculate estimates of vaccine effectiveness over time and against the different COVID variants. This is very disturbing because it suggests not only that the vaccines give negative, air quotes here in the studio, protection, negative protection, meaning it makes you more likely. Maybe now I'm starting to understand why people are wearing masks. They realize that they've done something that actually makes them more likely to get sick. Not only that the vaccines give negative protection after a few months, but also that they destroy the protection that should have been provided by natural immunity. The unvaccinated, again, this is a piece in the New England Journal of Medicine, and yet this medical group is still forcing their staff to take the boosters or prove their exemption so they don't have to get start off on this whole hamster wheel of shots every 2 to 4 months. The unvaccinated keep their protection from previous infection, but the vaccinated end up with negative efficacy even if they've been previously infected. This means the vaccines appear to demolish a person's natural immunity and leave him or her more vulnerable to infection than he or she was before. The new findings add to growing concerns among scientists about the effects of the COVID vaccines on the immune system. A recent study in mice, and now we study mice, remember these new boosters or updates, more about that in a minute. Pfizer tested on 8 mice. And apparently they went, all right, I think we're good to roll it out on a few hundred billion Americans. I don't even know if we know what happened to the mice. I'd like to hear an interview with some of the mice before I recommend that anybody get these boosters. A recent study in mice found that mRNA vaccines like Pfizer's inhibit the immune system's response to other pathogens. In that study, which is not yet peer-reviewed, the culprit appeared to be the lipid nanoparticles which carry the mRNA in the vaccine. Quote, we found that pre-exposure to mRNA LNPs or LNP, this is the liquid nanoparticle, alone led to long-term inhibition of the adaptive immune responses, unquote. Another preprint study found that Pfizer's vaccine, quote, induces complex functional reprogramming of innate immune responses, unquote, including, quote, inhibition of innate immune responses. I need to take a break, and then I've got another study that came out as well, and then I'm going to tell you, you know, they've talked at the World Economic Forum, everybody's pretty familiar now with their slogan, you'll own nothing and be happy. We all thought that meant things like cars, homes, you know, you're going to rent everything. Everything's going to be just a service. You're constantly on a subscription or something. But it appears from these studies, and I got one more to go before we get into this. Now the vaccinated don't even own their own immune system. You want to talk about owning nothing and being, well, I don't know about the happy part. Now you are going to have to go to Big Pharma. I'm reading you these studies, one from the New England Journal of Medicine. I've got another one that I'll do after the break. You now have to rent your immune system from Big Pharma. Sounds like about every 2 to 4 months, you've got to go for your updates. I thought they were going to take our houses and our cars. For a lot of you, it appears they've already taken your immune system away from you. I'll be right back. You know, for for 2 years now. Over 2 years, we've been told to follow the science, trust the scientists, listen to your medical professionals. Well, where are the medical professionals when this research comes out in the New England Journal of Medicine that shows you that these shots make you more likely to get COVID, and it's destroying your immune system? Let me read this to you one more time again, because I'm going to explain to you this World Economic Forum, you'll own nothing and be happy. It's not just homes and cars and cell phones and things like that. It is, this is a, well, they were talking the other day about you can rent your heated seats in new BMWs now. Was that the story? You can buy a car that's for heated seats, but you have to subscribe to his, you'll own nothing. You don't get your heated seats. You get the luxury of paying them every month for heated seats. Now it's your immune system. And this study found, quote, we found that pre-exposure to mRNA liquid nanoparticles or liquid nanoparticles alone led to long-term inhibition of the adaptive immune responses. Another preprint study found that Pfizer vaccine, quote, induces complex functional reprogramming of innate immune responses, meaning your natural immunity, your God-given ability in your body to fight off disease. You have now undergone functional reprogramming of your immune system, including, quote, inhibition of innate immune responses. I know this is difficult for people to admit to themselves, or if they rolled their children's sleeves up to this. But you're being asked to take more and more of these shots. So at least abandon the hamster wheel of more shots. A new preprint study by 9 health experts from major universities showed that the COVID-19 vaccines are 98 times worse than the virus. And mandatory booster vaccination in college is, quote, ethically unjustifiable. A new preprint study by 9 health experts from major universities shows that the COVID-19 vaccines are 98 times worse than the virus, and mandatory booster vaccinations are ethically unjustifiable. It's conducted by 9 top scientists from University of Washington, University of Oxford, University of Toronto, Harvard University, Harvard Medical School, University of California, San Francisco, Johns Hopkins University, Department of Surgery, and others. Using CDC and sponsored reported adverse event data, researchers conclude that booster regulations may result in more harm than good, according to the study. For every 1 COVID hospitalization prevented in previously uninfected young adults, this is to say nothing of the fact that probably most of our college kids have already been exposed, fought off, and now have natural antibodies to COVID. But this is, for every 1 COVID hospitalization prevented in previously uninfected young adults, 18 to 98 actual serious adverse events have been caused. Quote, per COVID-19 hospitalization prevented in previously uninfected young adults, we anticipate 18 to 98 serious adverse events, including 1.7 to 3.0 booster-associated myocarditis cases in males, and 1,373 to 234 cases of greater than 3 reactogenicity, which interferes with daily activities, the study stated. So in order to stop 1 COVID hospitalization, and again, this is only in previously uninfected college students. How many college students do you think, unless they have been terrorized by their parents into living in their rooms for the last 2.5 years, have already been exposed to and have already got naturally occurring antibodies to COVID? Now, we would know these things if the medical establishment had ever asked for us to be tested for antibodies, but they said that natural immunity was no good. Well, until now, when they admit it's actually better than the vaccines and doesn't wane over time, unless you've taken the vaccines and your natural immunity has been destroyed, according to this piece in the New England Journal of Medicine. But now they are causing more serious events, anywhere between 18 and 98 serious adverse events for every 1 hospitalization prevented. So we've got to harm 18 to 98 young adults in order to keep 1 young adult from going to the hospital. And like I say, they have taken your immune system from you, and they are now renting it back to you. Every 2 to 4 months, you've got to go see Daddy Pfizer or Moderna to get your immune system back for just a few weeks, and then they'll call you back in. You're renting your immune system.
So here's the simple version. If you're 12 and above and previously vaccinated, it's time to go get an updated COVID-19 shot.
Update. Got to get your update.
Now, here are a couple of caveats, because there are always a few caveats. If you got a recent infection or were recently vaccinated, it's reasonable to wait a few months. Now, we expect millions of people to get the shot this month as folks get back to school, get back to work, and get back into their regular routines after the summer. And as the annual flu vaccination campaign kicks into high gear later this month and into early October, we expect millions will choose to get their COVID-19 shot at the same time. Or over the course of the fall, when people go in for routine checkups. The good news is you can get both your flu shot and COVID shot at the same time. It's actually a good idea. I really believe this is why God gave us two arms, one for the flu shot and the other one for the COVID shot.
It's time for Nuremberg trials. You're now renting your immune system from Big Pharma if you've taken these shots into your life. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Wanted to get into some of this Russia-Ukraine stuff because the headlines have taken a decisively different turn over the past week to 10 days. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But I wanted to do this one COVID thing. I ran out of time last hour. I want to show you how disgusting, just disgusting and deceiving the media is and our so-called scientific community. This is the headline of a story on the Scientific American. The headline is, "The number of children orphaned by COVID keeps rising." The number of children orphaned by COVID keeps rising. Well, that's a terrifying, sad, sad story, isn't it? Oh, and the picture here and the thing's got a little girl all by herself and looking out the, pulling the curtains aside and looking out the window. Now, when you hear that children are being orphaned, what is your thought? What is the definition of an orphan? An orphan to me, I am a admitted graduate of Jackson Public Schools, but an orphan means to me you've got no parents. You have no caregivers. There's nobody to take care of you. Both of your parents are gone. And so this is a, let's see what this character's name is, Juliet Unwin. I wrote this on September 7th. Again, the headline, "The number of children orphaned by COVID keeps rising." As an epidemiologist, I'm used to studying waves of infection and measuring the rise and fall of deaths. While the deaths of parents and grandparents from COVID crash and recede, the pattern of children affected by orphanhood resulting from the death of a caregiver is entirely different. The death of a mother, father, caregiving grandparent, or other relative is permanent and enduring. In a letter published to JAMA Pediatrics, that's the Journal of the American Medical Association Pediatrics, I and a group of my colleagues estimated that from January 2020 to May 2022, 10.5 million children lost primary or secondary caregivers to COVID-associated deaths. They're saying that, and this certainly is a worldwide issue, although this story really seems to kind of couch this as a as an American issue. Number one, they've only said about 1 million people died from COVID. Now, unless each one of these people, if to be an orphan, don't you have to lose both parents? So you take up the 10.5 million people, or the million deaths we have here, and if half of them is the mom and half of them is the dad, that means 500,000 children, even if all of those million people who died were all related married couples or caregivers, I guess they could be divorced too, or grandparents. You know what I'm saying? There's no way they get to this number, certainly here in the United States. They point out in here just losing basically an adult that has a child. They're counting that child as an orphaned child. They're not orphaned. It's tragic when your mom or your dad dies, or a caregiving aunt or uncle or grandmother or grandfather. but you're not an orphan when one of your caregivers dies. Anyway, it's just absolutely disgusting stuff. The number of children orphaned by COVID keeps rising. You know, the number of children orphaned by their liberal definition of it could be the same for car wrecks and for diabetes and for cancer and strokes and heart attacks. Kids across the world and here in the United States lose a parent to a disease every day of the week. It's incredibly sad, but that is the way it goes. Anyway, just absolutely just disgusting and dishonest stuff by even our scientific community. But that's I'm repeating myself after 2 years of pointing out how disgusting our medical and scientific community has become. I wanted to talk a little bit today about what's going on in Ukraine. I don't know if you've been paying attention to this. Americans seem to be pretty well checked out. I would imagine the Europeans right now, who are also bearing the brunt of the psychopaths in charge of their society over there as they're struggling with 10x energy prices, businesses going under, rampant inflation over there just like it is here. A lot of us aren't really thinking that much about Ukraine on a day-to-day basis. But they're trying to give you some hope. Just hang in there. It's working. They got to give you some hope. Here's some of the headlines that were on Drudge. Russian forces flee as Ukraine makes rapid push. Quote, taken by surprise, quote, astonishing advances by the Ukrainian army. Putin, worst case scenario coming true. This is what all of the headlines are right now. And apparently there is evidence and there is admissions even on the Russian side that the Ukrainians have started to do a counteroffensive. And I want you to understand, the thing that kicked this whole thing off was that the Ukrainian government was murdering ethnic Russians in Ukraine. Ukrainian citizens of Russian descent, the Ukrainian government was murdering them. Russia said, can you please stop murdering the ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine? And the Ukrainian government goes, you're not the boss of us. We can murder our own citizens if we want to. Now, when Bashar al-Assad, we were told he was being mean to his own people, the United States actually started funding ISIS in Syria to try to take down the Syrian government. The Ukrainian government's being mean to their own people in terms of murdering 14,000 of them. And we give them more weapons to murder their people. Anyway, so Ukraine is trying to make a counteroffensive and take back some of these cities in eastern Ukraine. And they've made some progress. But maybe the mainstream media, isn't it possible? Mainstream media is not telling us the entire story. Here's what the wounded Ukrainian soldiers are actually saying. Ukrainian soldiers detailed in comments to the Washington Post the steep toll that Ukraine was facing in its southern Kherson counteroffensive, an operation that the U.S. reportedly helped Ukraine prepare. Since launching the offensive at the end of August, Ukrainian officials haven't offered much detail about the operation, and reporters are not allowed on the front lines. Huh, that's weird. For this bastion of freedom and democracy over there in Ukraine, they keep banning political parties. They won't let the media report. They won't allow reporters on the front lines. Very interesting, isn't it? The actions of the Ukrainian government, not at all freedom and democracy based, but we're constantly told that's freedom and democracy. That's what we're fighting for over there. But the Ukrainian soldiers who spoke with the Post in the hospital painted a grim picture of what the battle has been like for the Ukrainian side. Ukrainian soldiers said they lacked the artillery needed to oust Russia's forces from their positions. The soldiers said they had to carefully ration their munitions, and when they did fire their weapons, they had trouble hitting the targets. One platoon commander told the Post that Ukrainian forces, quote, lost five people for every one they did, meaning Ukraine is losing five of their troops for every one Russian that's being lost. And this is the West and Zelensky. That freak psychopath running his Nazi country over there, they are willing to fight this to the last Ukrainian. They're losing five of their soldiers for every one Russian troop killed. Ukraine has claimed some success in the offensive, but the claims cannot be verified. The soldiers interviewed by the Post that they were able to capture some villages that they were previously controlled by Russia, but it's not clear if Ukraine is capable of holding on to these positions. This is what they said. Oleksandr said the Russian artillery fire was relentless. Quote, they were just hitting us all the time, he said. If we fire three mortars, they fire 20 in return. The Ukrainian soldiers said they had to carefully ration their use of munitions, but even when they did fire, they had trouble hitting targets. Quote, when you give the coordinates, it's supposed to be accurate, but it's not, he said, noting that his equipment dated back to 1989. Oleksandr has never traveled to Kherson before the war, but he said the goal of expelling Russian invaders was worth sacrificing a limb. It's our country, he said. And so they're losing five people to every Russian that's being lost. The Ukrainian army does largely outnumber Russians. I read some accounts of it where Russia basically was giving up some areas there to allow the Ukrainian forces to come in so they could kind of surround them in those areas. We'll see if that's the case. Russia is just as capable of wartime propaganda as anybody else. Maybe it's not going well for them, but what does it say that the West has offered up the Ukrainian soldier? They're sacrificing five of them to kill every Russian. We're using these people as pawns to try to take Russia off energy markets, to alienate them. It's truly horrific what's going on. And here in this country, this is why I'm such a critic of the Republican Party. A lot of our own Roger Wicker, I know he's made very straight. He couldn't wait to get more money to the people of Ukraine. His capital city of his home state doesn't have drinkable water, and for a while there, people couldn't even flush their toilets. But he said it took too long to send the $40 billion over to Ukraine. That's your sitting U.S. Senator, Roger Wicker. And when we come back, speaking of money, you need to go ahead and get out your checkbook. They tell you this war with Ukraine is just going great. It's just really, this could be the turning point of the war. Look, Russia is still calling this a special military operation, and they committed a relatively small amount of their military to it. They certainly are capable to do significantly more damage than they have already done. I don't think anybody would argue that head-to-head, the Russian military versus the Ukrainian military, not even a match. And the farther this thing goes, if Ukraine is having some victories, Russia's going to say, all right, gloves off. And this is going to turn into an absolute bloodbath over there. The same conflict that could have been solved in an afternoon, either before this whole thing kicked off or any day since. I've already got stories lined up for Friday showing you that they are scuttling any peace talks. And when I come back, I'll explain to you why. Man, there's some big money being made in this war. Golly, there's some people really knocking the cover off the ball financially in this war. I'm sure that's just coincidence. It always is. The war profiteers just always happen to end up on the right side where the people who do the dying and the suffering, they lose out. But the defense contractors always do do great. Well, U.S. taxpayers, time to get your checkbooks out. We got some problems here when it comes to national defense here in the United States, and you're about to be asked to pay for it. I'll be right back.
Went home with a waitress, the way I always do. How was I to know? She was with the Russians too.
It's just so sick to me. We are spending taxpayer dollars here in the United States. We're ripping money out of families here in the United States to send it half a world away, so that five Ukrainian troops can die while one Russian troop dies. We're exporting death, and the taxpayers are footing the bill for it. And I keep asking, where's that red line where you just say, I'm just not paying for this anymore? I don't know. The mass slaughter of people over nothing? Could that be one of those reasons? But it's all going to come home to the taxpayer. This was just an interesting story for a couple of different reasons. The Pentagon needs to rapidly increase munitions purchases. Huh, that's interesting. If they want to be prepared for a shooting war with Russia and or China after depleting stockpiles due to large transfers to Ukraine. Now, I've explained this before. Essentially, what the military-industrial complex has got people like Roger Wicker doing for them is they said, hey, you know, we've kind of wound down, you know, Afghanistan's over. Middle Eastern wars are kind of winding down. I mean, we're still bombing the crap out of the poorest country over there, Yemen. The defense industry is very excited about helping the Saudi Arabians genocide Yemen. And the U.S. is participating in that. But that's really not enough for them. As I've told you before, if you look at the progression of these things, you know, the Cold War ends, and 8 months later, we're invading Iraq the first time. Afghanistan ends, and within a few months, we are now shipping munitions over to Ukraine. You see how this works? There can't be the defense industry, they can't afford peace. That's the bottom line. Now, particularly with this inflation, I mean, it's gotten very expensive for the executives at Raytheon and United Technologies and Boeing to buy beach houses. Have you seen the price of a beach house recently? Do you know what it costs to vacation in southern France now? These defense contractors need constant war. And so now we, what the defense industry did with people like Roger Wicker's complicity and most of the Republican Party and all of the Democratic Party, basically they said, look, what we really could do is let's just take everything out of our cupboards and send it over to Ukraine. Now, it's not going to be good stuff. They're not going to be able to aim real well with it. A bunch of Ukrainian soldiers are going to die because we're going to give them our old, outdated stuff. But it'll clear out our cupboards, and then you can place orders for all of our brand new, more expensive stuff. That's what's happening. And so now we are we're running out of stuff. Since the start of the war, the U.S. has transferred 806,000 shells of 155-millimeter howitzers, and 108,000 shells for 105-millimeter guns. That's about 1 million shells in 6 months. This figure does not factor in missiles and other precision-guided rockets. And so they're sending all these things over to Ukraine. Now, I ask you, what do you think would happen if we were in some kind of a military conflict, let's just say Iraq or Afghanistan, and we found out that the Russians had transferred 1 million American troop killing weapons to the people of Afghanistan or Iraq? Do you think we'd have a problem with Russia sending a million shells specifically designed to kill American troops in Afghanistan? Do you think we would have had a problem with that? I think we might have. But for some reason, we get to pretend we're not at war. And Russia shouldn't be mad at us. They're in the wrong while we are sitting here providing the weapons to kill Russian soldiers. It's really quite astounding thing to see. And I'm so happy to see the right start to wake up to these things, but they're not there. And you certainly have not yet held your political class accountable to this kind of stuff. As I said, Roger Wicker, his only complaint about the $40 billion to Ukraine is that it didn't happen fast enough, and it wasn't enough. That's what Roger Wicker said while his capital city didn't have drinkable water. So big orders going to be placed with the defense contractors to replace the 1 million shells that we've sent over to Ukraine. And the effect of that has been that 5 Ukrainian soldiers are dying for every 1 Russian soldier. It is unbelievable to me that we have not had just abject, wholesale cleaning out of our political class for the past 20 years. I mean, this warmongering, war profiteering is so in your face at this point. Vladimir Zelensky is the keynote speaker. I don't know when it's taking place or if it's already taking place. He was announced recently as the keynote speaker at the defense industry weapons show, at their little get-together, their convention with the merchants of death all get together to plot new wars and new ways to pick the pockets of American taxpayers. And Zelensky is the keynote speaker there because Vladimir Zelensky and the Ukrainian government is good for business. And that's what this is about. Not about a fight for freedom. It's not about a non-existent democracy in Ukraine where they have banned all opposing political parties and rule with a Nazi iron fist in Ukraine. It's not about any of those things. This is about business. And the sad thing is that in a time of great inflation, financial hardship for a lot of people coming out of COVID and heading into this inflationary spiral we're really just at the very beginning of, that the American taxpayers sit back and allow their pockets to be picked for this kind of activity. Just death. And we vote for it. If you don't think you do, take a look at who your senators and your Congress cruisers are. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. There was a story making the rounds. I guess it's kind of technology related for Tech Tuesday, or maybe more money. Says it. Look there. My feeling is, my spidey senses are, and I'm not alone. I didn't come to this conclusion alone. There's just a ton of information about this. Is that the U.S. economy is in a very, very dangerous place right now. We are at risk of totally destroying the dollar, both through our incredible spending patterns with the federal government. We're bankrupt. We're insolvent. We've got over $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities with no idea how to get that money. And then we've gone around the world provoking major powers around the world, and they're starting to get a little sick of being at the mercy of the U.S. dollar. So they they have already set up. I did a show on this. It's probably in the title of a podcast. You can find my podcast at The Mike Madison Show. It's on a bunch of different platforms. I don't know where all it is, but it's out there. It's on Apple Podcasts. I don't know where it is. Anyway, I did a show on the BRICS nations and other countries that are joining the BRICS nations, and they are trying to come up with an alternative to the U.S. dollar. And they're already successfully trading with each other in different currencies to try to bypass endless U.S. sanctions issued by the Biden administration, the Trump administration, the Obama administration, the Bush administration. It's just our government is just evil and corrupt. The U.S. State Department, the most evil institution on planet Earth, as far as I'm concerned. So we've been bossing everybody around, threatening them, taking their stuff, taking their yachts, freezing their accounts. They're sick of it. And so they are putting up an alternative system to the U.S. dollar around the world. And these aren't a ragtag group of small African nations. We're talking about Brazil, China, Russia, India. And most recently, about 12 other nations have indicated they want to belong to this alliance as well, including anyone, Saudi Arabia, our good friend the Saudis. They can see that the winds are changing, that the U.S. is a paper tiger. We have alienated ourselves from most of the world, save our Western puppets. And I believe the puppets will also cut the strings when this unipolar world of U.S. dominance is ended. And it seems like it is going to end toot sweet very soon. Believe me, Germany is much better off being allies with Russia at this particular point than they are the United States. They get basically nothing from us. They could solve their energy crisis over in Germany in an afternoon for all of their citizens. But, of course, they have a corrupt political class over there, too. Anyway, when the dollar does suffer this fate of being removed as the reserve currency, where there's no demand for dollars anymore because people can trade in other currencies, the U.S. dollar's toast. And when the U.S. dollar is toast, we're going to have a crisis here in this country that we've never seen before. We've never seen this. You know, a lot of people say, well, the great financial crisis, the worst economic crash since the Great Depression. This will be something that makes the Great Depression look tame. And it's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to be next week, next year, 10 years, 20 years. I really don't know. They've been talking about these alternatives to the U.S. dollar-based system around the world for quite a period of time. The U.S. has spent decades of bullying people and weaponizing the U.S. dollar. So they've been talking about it for a long time. I can't get a clear sense of exactly how close they are to just flipping the switch and going, all right, we're off the dollar. But they're getting a lot of big countries on board with this. Our days are numbered. The reason I bring this up is because when this happens, they're going to have to do something very, very dramatic to quell, to try to fix this economy so that it functions at all for a period of time. And I believe they will herd us all into a digital currency, a central bank digital currency. the Federal Reserve will basically be your banker. Now, I don't believe they're going to put J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs and all of the big money center banks out of business. They'll somehow still get their VIG. Maybe they'll kind of, you know, the Fed will subcontract to them some transaction fees, or maybe the Fed will just print up money and let these banking institutions just keep. I don't know how it's going to work. But we're going to be heralded into this digital currency. Most people do not use cash anyway. I'm involved with retail transactions all the time, and the vast majority of people use cards. So we've already been kind of, you know, convinced that, what do we really need cash for anyway? It's a pain in the butt. It's dirty. You got to go by the ATM. I don't know what the percentage of Americans are that would be absolutely fine going completely cashless. I mean, now you've got people that are just tapping their smartwatches somewhere, and that's how they pay for things. For them, a leap to a completely cashless society is going to be very easy. But there are huge downsides to that, and that's what brings me to this story that was making the rounds this week. Payment processor Visa said Saturday that it plans to start separately categorizing sales at gun shops. A major win for gun control advocates who say it will help better track suspicious surges of gun sales that could be a prelude to a mass shooting. The decision by Visa, the world's largest payment processor, will likely provoke the ire of gun rights advocates and gun lobbyists who have argued that categorizing gun sales would unfairly flag an industry when most sales do not lead to mass shootings. If they really want to flag something for mass shootings, they should start flagging the purchases of these psychotropic drugs. The hijacking of the American mind, the over-medication of us that has had just disastrous results. But anyway, this is just basically a warning shot here. This is a glimpse into the cashless society. Now, of course, when they have total control, right now you've got the opportunity to pay cash for a gun. I don't know if MasterCard and Discover and American Express and everybody else are going to follow suit, and I don't even really understand the entire plumbing of the payment processing system. Visa may be behind the scenes. Even if you use your Discover card, they may subcontract to Visa to actually clear trades. I don't know exactly how that works. But Visa's big, the largest payment processor in the world. And now you will basically, look, probably most people listening to me, myself certainly included, we're already on a list. But if you go down this path towards this cashless society, not only will they be flagging you for gun purchases, they may just flat out outlaw them across the board. Now, they'll come in with some things like, well, you can buy certain weapons, or maybe you can buy a handgun, but nobody needs two guns. Nobody needs three guns. They say, well, that's all right. I'll get around that. I'll just have my neighbor. I'll buy one. I'll have my wife buy one. I'll get my neighbor to. No, you think your neighbors, if they know that it's going to damage their social credit score, that they may be turned off? I mean, that's the thing with these central bank digital currencies, the idea of the cashless society. You can be just turned off. And everybody thinks, well, you know, I've got a good support. You got a good support group around me. Look, we've just had Americans turn on each other because somebody wasn't wearing a mask. We got people tattling on each other if they turn their thermostats too high or too low, depending on the weather, in Germany right now. The government's asking people to tattle on their neighbors for overusing electricity. You really think that a lot of the people in your group, I mean, how many people in your group were you just shocked to find out were incensed that you didn't take the experimental gene therapy? They wouldn't have you over. My little brother wouldn't allow me to come to his wedding because I had not undergone the grand experiment. So you can only imagine there will be no support system. And I got to tell you, I'd feel kind of icky if somebody ever turned me off. I'd feel kind of icky putting somebody else at risk of being turned off by transacting for me through these things. Anyway, this is just one of those signs that they are coming after you and your buying habits. And they've got, they're at the cusp of just about total control. I've called it for years and years, well over a decade. I've realized this turnkey tyranny. We just are all hoping, and I think those hopes are dashed, particularly with the arrival of the Biden regime. We're just hoping that surely nobody would ever use these systems against the American people. This is what conservatives thought about the Patriot Act and the National Defense Authorization Act. Conservatives believed that was only to be used against radical brown Muslims. And now you're shocked that they've actually turned those things in on us and have used some of those powers against a sitting president for 4 years. Well, this turnkey tyranny of the payment systems, anyway, you gun owners, don't use a Visa if you buy a gun. But your other escape routes are going to be slowly cut off one by one until finally even cash is outlawed. They may make it to where you can't buy a gun with cash. That'll actually be a crime. They want to make sure they've got a record of it. What are you trying to hide? You went and bought a gun with cash? What is it you're trying to hide? Just that alone will make you a suspicious citizen and have them maybe intervene. We've already seen videos just in the past couple of months of ATF agents and federal agents going to people's houses and knocking on the door and saying, hey, we understand you bought a few guns. We just wanted to see them. We've had a problem with straw purchasers, so we just wanted to come by, just swinging by. We don't have a warrant or anything, but we did knock on your door. We are heavily armed. We're standing out here in our combat fatigues, and we just want you to show us your guns. Because what you did was suspicious. You bought a couple of guns. I want to make sure those are really yours. Can you just go inside? This is I should have had the clip ready. Can you just go inside and just show us your gun? We'll be on our way. These are these fine men and women in law enforcement. I just wanted to swing by and just see that we could account for your guns. Can you account for them? I mean, because if you can't, that might be a problem. It's no business of theirs whatsoever how many guns you buy and what you do with your guns. But anyway, Visa. Matter of fact, we should all be tearing up Visa cards, take as much payment processing away from them as we can. But as I say, in the background plumbing of payment processing, I think Visa is probably untouchable. They probably are one of these groups that they're in just about every transaction. Doesn't matter who you use, but gun owners, beware. You're on a list. You'll be suspicious, and maybe you'll get one of those knocks at the doors. Hey, Visa alerted us, told us that you seemed like you bought a lot of ammo the other day. I don't know if you've noticed, we've got problems with some of these mass shootings around. What's your intention with all that ammo? I mean, nobody really needs that much ammo. These are questions you'll be answering at your front door, if you're lucky. If you're not just hauled out onto the porch, thrown to the ground and taken in for that kind of questioning, maybe the kinder, gentler way will just be that they'll just harass you at your front door. Anyway, this is disgusting stuff. Visa is known to do this kind of nasty stuff. They stop payment processing for other things as well. Do not let them get us into this cashless society. This really is... That's the end game. If you want total control over a population, you get control of their ability to transact, to buy and sell. I think that's biblical, isn't it? We'll be right back. You know, it's funny. I talked the other day, the founding fathers, Peter Schiff had done a show breaking down the taxes that the founding fathers found just a bridge too far for them. They just could not abide by the crown and its taxation on the American colonies. And so they fought a revolution to separate themselves from the British monarchy. The tax rate at the time for Americans was, according to Peter Schiff, 1.5%. I did a story yesterday where I said, for another year, and this has been a constant for some time, Americans spend more on taxes than they spend on food. What was it? Food? Wasn't food, clothing? Oh, food, clothing, and medical care, health care. They spend more on taxes than food, clothing, and medical care combined. To pay more in taxes. The founding fathers, we did a divorce with Great Britain over 1.5%. I mean, we are really just the weakest of the weak. I feel like I'm starting to call people out. I don't want to do that. We've all been lulled into this, bright, shiny SEC football and streaming services, so we've taken our eye off the ball. The founding fathers risked everything about a 1.5% tax rate. Because, see, they knew you got to nip it in the bud. At the time, the British were paying about 5% to the crown, and they knew that that 1.5% was going to continue to grow, so they just went, no. We're leaving. Here in the United States, we've got even the most radical patriots out there saying, I'm voting for the guy that's only going to take 25% of my income, not those demons who want to take 28%. I got a huge victory because my guy only takes a quarter of my income. Their guy wanted to take almost a third. that's where we've come. But anyway, there's a lot of battles to be fought in this country. So the not accepting the cashless society, the central bank digital currency. And look, the way that's going to roll out is I can see it coming from a mile away. If we have a dollar crisis, there are going to be so many people that are desperate, and a lot of people that don't ever think that they would ever be desperate because they've saved money and they've done the right things. And right now they're on some sound financial footing. And yeah, of course, the inflation is, it sucks, but I can handle it. I can handle it. You know, I've got a good job. You don't understand with a dollar crisis, those things change. It was a very sad story of a guy who was in one of the breakaway republics from Russia or something. After the Cold War, he started saving money. He was actually putting it in the cushion of his couch to save for his, I think it was his daughter or maybe it was both of his children, but for his kids when they got married. And like one of his kids got married, but during the year previous to the kids getting married, the currency had collapsed. And this man had sacrificed his entire life as his children were growing up and socked this money away, literally just piling it into his couch cushions. He pulls it out of his couch cushions when his child gets married to give them this great endowment, and it was worth nothing. And so they are going to push us to a point of desperation where a government lifeline of a Fed wallet, they're going to give you some central bank digital currency. It may be, in your mind, the difference between life or death. Can I feed my children? Oh, Mike, I understand this is a dangerous thing. I shouldn't be giving over all of this control over my life to the federal government, but I've got kids to feed. And the problem is that you can see these things coming from a mile away. We're not going to do anything about it. We got midterms coming up. No Republicans are out there saying, hey, are you going to make sure we do not adopt some kind of a digital currency? Are you going to stop printing money? Are you going to stop this Federal Reserve from destroying our currency? Are you going to stop our foreign policy establishment from alienating the rest of the world and getting all these other major economic powers to search for an alternative to our currency? Are you going to stop any of these things? No, not one Republican is going to ask that question. They're going to say, are you going to cut my taxes by 5%? That's what they're going to do. But you can see this coming from a mile away. And people are going to be so desperate that to have any relief whatsoever, you know, one of the most disgusting terms I keep hearing Biden use, it's so gross, but it is what the elite ruling class think of you. If you listen to Biden, anytime he talks about the economy or any of his harebrained schemes, he says, this should give you just a little bit of breathing room. He usually whispers it. Americans deserve a little breathing room, a little breathing room in their finances because they know they have eroded this economy, destroyed our quality of life for the lower working classes for decades now, and it's coming for the middle class, just accelerating, and they know they've got us just on a knife's edge of financial ruin. You're one disease away. One heart attack, one cancer diagnosis from complete ruin. They ruined some of your businesses with COVID restrictions. I mean, just they know they've got everybody just right there at the precipice. Just give you a little breathing room. That's all the government wants you to have. Just some breathing room. Not freedom, not prosperity, not independence. Just they're going to give you just a little bit of breathing room so you don't completely freak out. And that's what's going to happen. People are going to need breathing room. And the vast majority of people don't listen to people like me, for sure. And the mainstream people who people do listen to, by the tens of millions of people, the conservative commentators, they give you the political theater of it all, but they're never going to talk to you about central bank digital currencies until it's too late. That's when conservatives really get on board with things. Well, Steve Bannon brought up the Fed and abolishing the Fed at CPAC. Well, it's about 110 years overdue. I guess better late than never, but we're getting to the point where it's too late. And so this is what's going to happen. You can prepare yourself to not be so desperate that you would accept this thing into your life, but if all of our federal citizens do, then they're just going to roll this out. It doesn't really matter if we want it or not anyway. If we get to a situation where people are so desperate that being able to download an app means you're going to have 1,000 Fed bucks on your phone in your wallet that you can use for food, this society will scramble for that. And really, I don't know if it's savable at this point. I really don't. We may just have to live through this, but it sure would be nice. We've got midterms. We've got 2024. I don't know if I've ever heard Donald Trump bring up central bank digital currencies. He sure as hell didn't do anything but make the Fed more powerful during his term. Lower those rates. He cried. They're raising rates. Now you're paying the inflation for it. Most Trump supporters cannot connect those two dots. That's unfortunate. Anyway, I was going to get in some electric car EV stuff, but I can see this coming from a mile away. And a lot of people have seen it for decades and decades, but over the last 10 years, boy, the picture is crystal clear. The cashless society is coming. Central bank digital currencies are coming. They need to be stopped. Very little hope of that.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how...